like everybody's back yet, but my name is Dan, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Dan.
And that has a great ring to it, you know. I'm an alcoholic, drug addict, compulsive gambler. And the most important thing I'm going to say to you here this morning is that I'm clean and sober today by the grace of God. And to me, the grace of God is the 12 steps and all the fellowships and you people and the power of prayer and meditation. And with all of that, I get a one-day reprieve from using, and that's the miracle of this program, you know, and I can't ask for anything more than that. And at one time I didn't feel like I deserved anything more than that, but today I feel deserving anyways. I found out this morning that this was going to be recorded, so I thought, boy, I got to change my story. You know, and it is our story, so, I believe addiction is something, at least in my view, that I had from birth. And I feel sorry for my poor mother, God rest her soul, because she put up with that from day one. She prayed for me. She knew I had a problem. She knew I was worth saving, and she loved me. And, you know, I didn't think I had a problem. I didn't think I was worth saving, and I didn't love me. You know, and the miracle of what happens here is today I know I have a problem, and it's the disease of addiction, I call it. And I know I'm worth saving today, and I love me. You know, and I couldn't say that for 50 years, you know, but here today I can say that I love me, and thus, being able to love myself, I can love others, because I could never do that either, you know, because it all starts from within. I'm not going to really get into a lot of war stories. I can guarantee you that I have all the credentials I need to be standing here right now. I started using in my teen years. I think I made it into high school, and I was like most likely to succeed. You know, I was good in school. There was always something there, though. I always had problems relating with people. I could never figure out who my best friend was. You know, everybody else, this is my best friend, this is my best friend. And I couldn't figure out who my best friend was. By the time I left high school, you didn't want your kids anywhere near me. You know, whether it was a girlfriend or just, the guys in the neighborhood. Because I turned into a bad apple real quick. Smoking pot. As soon as I started smoking pot, I think that was a big downfall for me. You know, just like they warned you, even though, you know, I didn't believe it, though it can lead to bigger, stronger things, and it did. I started, can't remember the first time I snorted coke, so that tells you how far back I date. Once I started, as in everything, I couldn't stop. Between ages of 16 and 30, the amount of chemicals things that I smoked and things that I drank would have probably been deemed inhumane for a person to do that to themselves. And I didn't think, you know, I for most of that time, I didn't think there was any problems at all. You know, I kind of thought that that was just normal. I was just a partier. You know, it was one of those, you know, party till you puke things. And I never puked, you know, and I never passed out. So it was just one big party. You know, jobs I had, I could use while I was working. I worked outside. I did construction a lot. And, you know, by noon, we were, you know, half in a bag by noon. You know, and those were the jobs that I like to have because I could party all day long. DUIs, had a couple of them. Had one on my 27th birthday. And the cop didn't care a whole lot that it was my birthday. And he asked me, did you even see that stop sign? I just remember him saying, and then he said, you're drunk. I'm like, wow, you know, guilty before proven it, I guess. But I was, and that was 1984, and that was the first time I was introduced to AA or any of the fellowships at all, and I took that with a grain of salt, and I was just right back out there, even though I didn't relapse a whole lot. I did relapse, and at that point in time, I didn't care about anything. You know, I was jumping back and forth trying to make. I moved to northern Wisconsin to try to get. I was from Chicago. I moved to northern Wisconsin to try to get away from all of the problems, and my parents owned a bar. So what a great place to try to get away from your problems is going to a bar and living there and having free booze, whatever you want, you know. Even though that's, you know, that's neither here nor there because I never had problems getting anything I wanted. So, you know, you can't hide from it no matter where you go. I moved back down to Illinois, and that was kind of the beginning. Well, the beginning of my bottom was when I first started using, but this was kind of the end of my first bottom, we'll call it. And I was just out of my mind. And the addiction got really, really bad, and I knew it now. I was at a point where I even recognized something is wrong. And I was nearing 30 years old. And, you know, I just in my mind, oh my God. You know, I had some sort of a crisis. I'm 30 years old, and I don't have anything, and I'm doing drugs all the time, and I don't have a career, and, you know, I'm divorced. I have a son. You know, my jobs all suck, and I'm really smart, but I never used any of that. So I put myself into a treatment center for 28 days. And my son was being raised by his mother-in-law, and she was a realtor, and she had a lady there that was sober a few years. So I got connected right away out of treatment with some pretty solid people in Illinois. And I did what they told me, and I thought I had a good program going. I was sober 3 years. And lo and behold, I stopped going to meetings. You know, but see, I believe that before you stop going to meetings, you stop working the steps. Because to me, I call the second step the meeting step. You know, we come here to believe. And so first you stop working the steps, then you stop going to meetings. Because if you're working the steps, you're going to meetings. That's just the way it is. 2 years of my life, I didn't use, I didn't go to meetings. You know, I was just a mess. That was the biggest, that was worse than if I was using that 2 years in time. Of course, I started using again. By some unexplained reason, I never touched coke again. So it's been over 25 years since I've snorted a line of coke, which doesn't matter because I did use other things in that period of time. I also said I'm a compulsive gambler. I started playing the horses when I was 18, and that was, if I really had to make a choice, that was probably my drug of choice. I love the horses. In this time so my relapse officially started. This was my second relapse, and it went on for 20 years. And in that 20 years, I can honestly say that I, until the very, very end of it, I never had one thought that I should get back to AA or CA or any of that. I drank, I gambled, didn't snort coke, so maybe that was my, you know, maybe that was part of my rationalization that, you know, this is okay. I was sitting at a bar about 6 years ago now, maybe even a little longer. Somewhere in there I lost a couple of years of time too, but and I was sitting next to this old man, and I popped a couple Excedrins, and he asked me what were those, and I said they're just Excedrins. And he says I got something that's much better than those, you know. So he gave me 3 Percocets, and I took, of course, you know, being the addict that I am, I took all 3 of them, and boy, you couldn't wipe the smile off my face. You just couldn't wipe it off my face. And for the next period, small period of time, I was on those, and I could drink on them, and I could work away. I was happy all the time. I was whistling at work all the time. I have a cleaning business, and it appeared that I was always happy. Well, you know, somewhere in there, if you know anything about opiates, they're bad news. Somewhere it turned into snorting Oxycontins. But I was still keeping my job going, so that was another one of my rationalizations that this is okay because I'm still working. And not that I was a compulsive worker either, but I was working like 70 hours a week. Well, I needed to work 70 hours a week to pay for my addiction, but I couldn't work 70 hours a week without doing the drugs I was doing to keep me going. And it just spiraled. It just spiraled. The last 2 years of my using, I didn't even need to drink a drop of alcohol. I didn't, and I didn't need to. I was just so hooked on this crap, and I wanted to kill this guy that, you know, I blamed him for turning me into a junkie, and, you know, today I pray for him every day, and that's how it's changed. But I couldn't even get out of bed until I you know, did my line, and then I was fine. But that's how bad that particular stuff is. I got my third DUI, and I knew I was in trouble. And, you know, I look back at this, and it had to have been the grace of God, because I just went off of this stuff cold turkey. I still wasn't done, though. I still wasn't done. The last day that I used, I took some sleeping pills because I was having problems sleeping. And, of course, I wanted to sleep really, really good, so I took 5 of them. You know, I couldn't just take 1 of anything, ever. And I woke up in the morning, I left the house, I went to get some sort of breakfast, came back, and there was a note sitting on my kitchen table. And I looked at it, and it wasn't in my handwriting, and it didn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, it was like hieroglyphics, you know, and my son came over, and I even called my landlord and said, who's got keys to my house? Somebody broke in here and wrote this thing, not knowing what it was or anything. Well, my son came over that night, and he read it back to me, and it was a suicide note. Somewhere in it, it said, Dear Dad. But other than that, the whole rest of it didn't make any sense. Today, being sober a while and being of a little more sound mind, I wish I would have kept it. It probably would have blown the mind of a psychiatrist. But when he read that back to me, I just ripped it into little pieces and threw it away, because that's where I was at the time. Well, that was the last day I used. I just kind of freaked out. I knew I was going to start seeing I had to be sober anyways. I was going to start seeing an AODA counselor because of the DUI I had. And I wanted to be sober because they test you for that, you know, and you can't use. This is how my sobriety this second time started. And I knew all about the program. I knew about the 12 steps. I knew about AA and CA. And, you know, I wouldn't advise anybody to get sober the way I did here, but I still couldn't get myself to a meeting. But I was seeing this counselor who was a recovering guy, and I was seeing him once a week, and I was kind of using him as a, you know, to unleash what I needed to unleash. And, you know, we talked program. The second day with him, right at the start of our talk, he looks me in the eyes and says, Dan, do you gamble? And I thought, oh, man, here we go. You know, they're hitting me with that, too. And, you know, and I said, yeah. And I said, how could you have guessed that I gamble? And so we had sessions. He always asked, he was recovering. He never said, Dan, you have to go to AA or CA. You have to go to it. He never said that to me once, even though that's what he was thinking. You know that's what he was thinking. And he would ask me at the end of our discussions, though, you know, have you thought of AA? And I would say, yeah, I thought of it. Still wouldn't get to a meeting. About a month down the line, he asked me what step I thought I was on, because I knew about the steps. And I had bought a 12 and 12 and a big book at this time anyways. And I said, well, I think I'm on the third step. And he said, well, I think you could probably move on to the fourth step. And I didn't fight it. I read the big book, and I went and I bought one of these Hazleton guides for the four step, and I started on my four step right away. I'm a real big believer that, and you hear it a lot about the four step, you know, and if you're having problems with the four step, take a step back. You know, maybe you still have to work on making that decision, or take another step back, and maybe you have to get the hope of the second step before you can even, you know, tackle that fourth step. But I believe that if you've made an honest and with all the hope you have decision to turn your will and your life over to care of God, you're going to do the fourth step. That's all there is to it. You're going to work the rest of the steps. So I did the fourth. He told me you got to find somebody to do the fifth with. I did the fifth with him. He said I was the first guy that ever did a fifth step with him, and he's been a counselor for 10 years. You know, whatever that means, that doesn't mean really anything, but you know, I thought it was a good thing. So our sessions ended in May. Still haven't, and I had been seeing him since December. I hadn't used, was feeling better. You know, I must have been working the steps because I did a fourth and a fifth. I prayed a lot. I love to pray, and I always have loved to pray. Still haven't got myself to a meeting, though. Finally, you know, and I call this the grace of God. He carried me into the Pass It On Club in August of that same year. And I plopped down at the bar there, at the counter, we'll call it. And, yeah, we don't want to throw anybody off here. And of course, I looked like, you know, one of these dogs with their tails between their legs. You know, they knew I was new. They could tell, and they, you know, and they got me, you know, and that's the good thing about, you know, this program, and that's the we part of it. You know, we're not alone anymore, and I was alone up until that point. I was still alone and still fighting things, you know, in the back of my mind, and that's where it all began. You know, I walked into, and I, like I said, I wouldn't advise anybody to do this, but I was on the eighth step when I walked into AA. Imagine that. But right away, they grabbed me. I got a sponsor who was, somebody else told me that this guy would be good for you. At a meeting, I said, I think I'm a compulsive gambler too. And boy, oh boy, a guy grabbed me after the meeting and said, I have a sponsor for you, because he's in GA too. And I thought, well, so I nabbed him right away. And it was a good thing. He's been clean in GA for a long, long time. In fact, I asked him, there's a bunch of GA meetings at the Dewey Center, and I asked him if he'd ever been to a meeting at the Dewey Center, and he said he started them all. And I didn't even know that, so, you know, that's the way it was anyways, and that's what happened. What it's like now, it's indescribable what's going on in my life today. And I owe it all to, like I said earlier, the grace of God and the fellowships and the steps and you people. And that's the we part of this program. And it doesn't work without the we. And for me, we includes God. You know, mornings of, I go to a lot of 10:30 meetings at the Pass It On Club. That's pretty much my meetings every day. Well, not every day, but I like to go to them. And I have to wake up at 6:45 in the morning just to get all the things that I need to get done on a daily basis to get there by 10:30. I start my day, I wake up, and I thank God for being alive first. And then I thank Him for being clean and sober today before I even ask Him for the help of being clean and sober today. Because I know I'm going to ask Him for His help and His graces today. And I know when I do ask Him for that He's going to keep me clean and sober today. I know that. That's the faith that I have. And it might sound a little arrogant and egotistical, but it's not. Not one day at a time. And that's so important, is that one day at a time thing. If my sponsor has tried to install anything in my head, it's living one day at a time. And I understand why. You know, even doing this engagement today, you know, Randy told me a week ago, and all of a sudden you get nervous, you know, and you start thinking, you start projecting, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? Well, that's not living one day at a time, you know. You know, when he called me last Saturday, I was right in the middle of the seven-step prayer, you know, and isn't it amazing how that works? You know, he told me he was putting names in a hat. He asked me if I would put my name in a hat, and I said sure, you know, at our meeting on Tuesday. And he said there was three people in the hat, and they picked mine. And I said, being a gambler, we call that 3-1. I used to love to hit 3-1 shots. I used to love anything I'd hit. Anyways, And I thank God every morning for allowing me and choosing me to carry the message. That is the ultimate gift of this whole program. And I believe that's God's will, is practicing these principles in all our affairs and carrying the message to other addicts. You know, that's the gift we get from working the steps as they are. And they are written in such perfect order to give you that. I mean, these are a gift. You know, we are given this way of life from God to, because he knows we can't do it by ourselves. You know, and that's the miracle of it. And I call it a miracle because, and I can only base that on the life that I've led and how it is today. But yet, you know, I come here and I see others, you know, and that's how we do it too. We come to these meetings and we bring our hope, whatever hope we have, we bring it, we throw it on the table, and then we grab more of it, you know, and that's how it works. You know, I grab a lot of hope, and I have a lot of hope, and, you know, I don't like to tell people what to do. You know, I sponsor a couple people, and, you know, I don't even tell them what to do because they're going to do what they want anyways. You know, you can suggest things. I like to lead more by example. But when it comes time, and I believe there is a time, learn to meditate if you can. Our 11th step says sought through prayer and meditation, not just through prayer. And meditation is so powerful. Early on in my sobriety, there was a guy at a meeting, and he asked us if anybody wants to learn how to meditate, that he would teach us. You know, he could teach us in 5 minutes just to begin. So three of us raised our hands. He took us downstairs at the Passing On Club, and he just had us sit in a chair, upright, relaxed, and close our eyes and just breathe in, 1, 2, 3, and breathe out, 1, 2, 3, and breathe in, 1, 2, 3, and breathe out, 1, 2, 3. Since I have read a bunch of books on meditation and all of that, and I meditate for 40 minutes every morning and 40 minutes every night, and you know, there are times that I don't get angry sometimes I can't even remember the last time I got angry sometimes, you know, and I still get angry, you know, and that's telling me that I'm not perfect and there's still things to strive for. But that meditation just is such a calming thing, you know. You know, it tells us, relieve me of the bondage of self. You know, that's the problem. The problem is right here, the bondage of self. And how do we tackle that problem? Well, I can't do it. I'm powerless over it. I'm powerless over every single thing but one. And because we're powerless over everything that's happened before this moment right now in time, and we're powerless over everything that's going to happen in the future. So what aren't we powerless over? We're not powerless over the moment. And in that moment, there's one thing that I can do, and that's make the decision. You know, I can turn my will and my life over to care of God. And if I do that, I believe everything else is going to work out. I believe that. You know, I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I'm powerless over myself and my defects of character. So I, learning through the steps, I can't do anything about that. You know, I have to ask God for help. And I ask him every morning for the help that I need. I say a lot of prayers. The third and the seventh and the 11th step prayers are awesome. You know, the Our Father and the Serenity Prayer are awesome. And I have another prayer that I'm going to share with you before the end that pulls me out of all of my crap. You know, and the stuff still goes on. You know, and life is still life out there. You know, people, you know, I mean, financially I'm not doing better than I have in the past. You know, people die, people relapse, You know, you have trouble with the bosses. You know, people are still going to cut you off when you're driving. You know, I've heard people say you can tell your sobriety, you know, about, you can relate it to how you drive, you know. And I'll tell you, you know, there are times where somebody will cut me off and I'll just laugh about it, you know. But I was always the one that needed to get to that red light first. You know, I was always the one that was cutting this guy off to get to the red light so I could sit there longer than him, whatever it was, you know. You know, today I'm that guy in the right lane doing the speed limit, so watch out for me. Don't rear-end me. So I admit all my powerlessness. You know, I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over drugs and narcotics. I'm powerless over gambling. I'm powerless over sex. I'm powerless over eating. You know, have you ever thought, and I pray about this every morning, about how to eat spiritually? You know, I don't even know if there is such a thing, you know, but I pray about it every day. And I'm sure, and I'm not pointing a finger at anybody, but I'm sure eating spiritually isn't chomping on sugar and washing it down with caffeine. I'm sure that is not eating spiritual. Whatever eating spiritually is, you know, somebody looks at me and says, well, what are you going to do? And I says, probably eventually I'm going to be eating spinach, fish, and drinking water, and that's it. You know, I don't know. But I ask God for help every day. You know, and that's important. You know, prayer is there to be consistent, I think. I don't think prayer is there to ask for something and you don't get it, and that's the end of the prayer because you didn't get it. Because I believe, and I've seen it, that when you pray for something, you are going to get it. So watch out for what you pray for. You know, because I've gotten it, and it happens. You know, but that's the one day at a time thing. You know, we need to work these steps one day at a time. That's why when I wake up in the morning, I have to do a certain, I probably work 6 steps every morning before I'm out of bed. And I have to do that. You know, it's important to thank God, too, for what we have. If you can't thank Him for anything else, thank Him for being clean and sober today. You know, because that's a big thing. That's not a little thing. You know, that's a huge thing. And thanking God, He doesn't need our thanks, but we need to thank Him for us. That's a thing we do for ourselves, you know. If for no other reason, we're acknowledging God by thanking Him. You know, and that's an important thing. That's important that we need to acknowledge Him, because, you know, we fought with that for the longest time, and I fought with having God as my higher power, you know, for most of my life. You know, and here, you know, finally you get to the point where you can accept it. You know, you can accept God, and that's just an important thing. Powerless over sports. I can watch a basketball game now and it doesn't even matter who wins or loses it to me. And I couldn't, I mean, I used to throw things through the tube, you know. It doesn't matter today. It just doesn't matter. That's not an important thing in my life. You know. And thus you come to that ultimate thing. You get to give it away. You know, you get to carry the message, and I thank God for that every day. The message of hope. You know, the message is that we have this gift that has been given to us, that we can stay clean and sober one day at a time. And that's the gift. And we can't keep it unless we give it away. You know, and that's just, it's a miracle. It really is. I don't believe in luck anymore. And I used to believe in luck. I don't believe in superstitions. I don't believe in coincidences. You know, today I believe in miracles. You know, I believe in hope and faith. Because that's what works. You know, and I wouldn't trade this life for anything. One day at a time, though. You know, my sponsor, If I talk to him about going to a meeting tomorrow, he'll tell me one day at a time. That's how he installed this into my head, you know. So, and being a businessman, how do you run a business without thinking ahead a little bit, you know? But still, it comes down to just today, you know. If we can stay clean and sober today, that's it. That's all we have right now. And that's why you guys are all here, and I want to thank you all for being here. You know, you're all here because you want to be clean and sober today. And that's why I'm here. You know, we get together, and that's what we do. We help each other stay clean and sober. And it's just such a good thing. And grateful. You know, a byproduct of all of this that happens in my life is... For one, I'm happy today, and I've never been happy. You know, not even back in the days where I had tons of money and fast cars and women and all of that. I was never happy. And today I'm happy, and I don't have any of that. You know, so that's the difference. And gratitude. You know, gratitude is a byproduct of what's happening here. Gratitude isn't something that you just have. It's something that you get from... doing the right things, from asking God for help, and you know, and working the steps. The steps are just so important, you know, that just, you know, make that decision every morning. You know, it's such a simple thing. The steps are so simply written, you know. Yet how long did it take us to get honest with that first step? You know, for me it was a long time, 35 years, you know. But just to thy own self be true, you know, and there is one. This is the most, you know, profound statement I think is in the big book for me, and that is, there is one that has all power, and that one is God, not good old Dan. You know, it used to be good old Dan. You know, today it's not. Today it's God. You know, and that's the change. You know, we're changing. You know, and that's a good thing. You know, we have the promises. They're open right here. The promises. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. You know, and it's the gift of this program that He's given us. And then at the end of my day, I thank Him. I review my day. You know, I do a 10-step inventory every day, and a lot of times in this day and age, it's good things. You know, it's not all bad things, and it never was all bad things. But I think we dwelled on, you know, all the crap that went on in our lives. You know, today there's more good things than bad things going on. You know, and a lot of times during the day, when I, you know, the books tell me when I'm angry, something's wrong with me. Period. You know, there's no such thing as justifiable anger for an addict. So when I'm not feeling right, when I'm angry, when I'm, you know, judgmental, when I'm trying to tear down somebody else to make me feel better, I know something's going on in here. You know, and that's when I need to pray. I usually try to nip it right away. You know, and I'll end on a prayer that. That I've been saying for a long time. You know, God put it in my head, and you know, and I wrote it down on paper, and it's just brought me, with all the other prayers that I say all the time, out of my doldrums, and has helped me with a defect if it comes up during the day. And it goes like this: Lord, guide our thoughts, our actions, and our words, so we may continue to be disciples and miracles of thy power. Use us to serve as messengers of your love and symbols of your hope and strength. Help us to live our lives one day at a time, or when need be, one moment at a time. Carry us toward thy will always. Amen. Just want to thank you all for... let me carry the message today, and God bless you all. Thanks.